briefly this afternoon to a question which is alluded to by Rashi very early on in the Sedra that we just read this past Shabbos, which is what exactly is the connection between Yisro and Matan Torah. Certainly, like the most famous thing in Parashas Yisro are the Aseres HaDibros. They're repeated again in Sefer Dvarim in Parashas Veschanan. But the question is, like, you know, why are we framing this within the story of Yisro? So one answer may be that it's just chronological, that, you know, Yisro came and, you know, what immediately followed was Matan Torah. Okay, that's one possibility. But that doesn't work according to every view. There's a Gemara in Masech Tzvachim and Daf Kufta Zayin where the Gemara tries to figure out what exactly it was that Yisro heard. We're told Vayishma Yisro, then we're given his two different descriptions, which is kind of a dichotomy in its own right. On the one hand, he's the Kohen Midyan, on the other hand, he's the Chosein Moshe. So there's a kind of competing identities, and if you follow the story very carefully, this is not the topic of today's shiur, is that the various descriptions drop away. He's never again described as the Kohen Midyan. So sometimes he's called Yisro Chosein Moshe from that point on, and sometimes he's just called Yisro. This is part of the reason that Chazal assumed, not the only indication, that Yitro was involved in a Tahalich Giyur, that he was involved in the process of conversion, that he's no longer referred to as Kohen Midyan. And again, there are other indications as well. So in any event, the Torah goes on to say, Kohen Midyan Chosein Moshe, Eis Kol Asher Asa Elokim LeMoshe LeYisrael Amo, Ki Hotzi Hashem Mes Yisrael MiMitzrayim. So Yisro heard something about Yitzias Mitzrayim, but the Torah is not particular or specific about what exactly it was that he heard. So there are three different views. There's the view of Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, there's the view of Rabbi Lazar Hamodai, and there's the view of Rabbi Yoshua. So two of the three views suggest that he heard something that had actually been presented already in the Torah. So maybe the most logical view is that he heard about the battle against Amalek. That's sort of the last topic in Parshas Bishalach, and then immediately Vayishma Yisro, and Yisro heard. So that is a possibility, but it's a little difficult to read that into the psukim because the battle against Amalek, even though it was Baderach Betzeischem Mitzrayim, you probably wouldn't describe that right the way that the Torah says at the beginning of Parshas Yisro, Ki Otzi Hashem Bes Yisrael Mitzrayim, right? That's sort of like ancillary or secondary to Yitzias Mitzrayim. So there's another view, which is that it was actually Kriyas Yamsuf. Okay, so that already we could say fits in better with the words, Ki Otzi Hashem Es Yisrael Mimitzrayim. But there's another view, the view of Rabbi Yoshua, which is particularly fascinating. Rashi happens to be very supportive of this view in general. He comments on this numerous times, where Rabbi Yoshua actually says that what did Yisro heard? He heard Matan Torah. He heard that the fact that the Torah was given. And that really raises the stakes in terms of today's shiur. Thankful, Rabbi Yoshua's view, is that Matan Torah actually transpired prior to Yisro's coming, which then raises the question, why would the Torah really take things out of their natural order and present things in this way? Clearly, according to this view of Rabbi Yeshua, which again Rashi endorses very heavily in a variety of different places, you know, the Torah meant to teach us something important by framing Matan Torah and the Aseres HaDibros in terms of this story of Yisro. So I'd like to explore, as I indicate in the title, and we always thank Joanne for sending out the titles, and I try to, you know, make the titles Kishmo Kein Hu. You know, what you see is what you get. I'd like to explore three different approaches as to why the Aseres HaDibros might be framed in terms of the story of Yisro. Again, it's not one of the areas where I think there's one definitive answer, but I think all of these, I hope, are valuable perspectives about the nature of Matan Torah and what the interaction between Yisro, particularly between Yisro and his son-in-law Moshe, have to teach us. So the first approach is actually less focused on Yisro than it is on Moshe, believe it or not. So there's a famous pasuk, Navi Yeshayahu, Hoy kol tzameh l'chula mayim, that a person who's thirsty should go get water. Sound advice. Okay, but the rabbis understood it in a little bit of a different way. Ein mayim ela Torah. That really what we're talking about is a person lo rav alachem velo tam alamayim kim lishmo divrei Hashem. That ein mayim ela Torah. And this is a beautiful motif throughout the rabbinic literature about the comparisons between Torah and water. Certainly water is essential for life. Remember famous story with Rabbi Akiva at the end of the Gemara Masechta Brachos that we're not going to fish, even if they're fishermen, we're not going to leave the water. It's more dangerous for us outside the water. But there's another comparison between Torah and water. So the Gemara goes on to explain that, as any plumber will tell you, and I don't mean that in a derisive sense, that water flows
downhill.
Okay, very good. That's what I was waiting for. Okay, very downhill, exactly. That water flows downhill. That's exactly right. So so Torah, the Gemara says, Torah is also holech mimakom gavo alumakom namuch. The Torah doesn't reside in those who are arrogant. The Torah is only acquired by those who are manmich es atzmam, who lower themselves. So with that Gemara in mind, so let's take a look at Moshe's behavior in the story of Yisrael. We know that Moshe had achieved much since he went from Midian to Mitzrayim. Remember, he very courteously takes leave of his father-in-law, and Yisro says to him, Lech l'shalom, go in peace. And since that point in time, Moshe has faced down Paro. He's overseen the process of the 10 plagues, the Kriyas Yamsuf. Maybe even according to this view, you know, he's communed with the Almighty himself for 40 days and 40 nights. You know, in the process of Matan Torah, Moshe has certainly achieved a lot. So when his father-in-law comes visiting from Midian, you might expect Moshe to say, we have this very nice waiting room over here. You know, I'm in my busy meetings right now, and I'll come. Moshe was very busy. But what do we see is just the opposite. Once Yisro announces, whether it was through a messenger, or through a letter, that's a whole discussion in its own right, that he's coming, what's Moshe's response? Anybody remember? Vayitse Moshe likras chosno. Not only does he come out to greet him, but vayishtachu, vayishaklo, vayishalu, very important language, pay attention to the language, ish lire'ehu l'shalom. He relates to him as ish lire'ehu, on completely, you know, equal footing, on even ground, without any sense of arrogance or superiority that somehow he's better. And the Torah is a little ambiguous. It wants, you know, it says, vayishtachavu, vayishaklo, vayishalu, ish lire'ehu l'shalom. The question is, who bowed down to whom? So the Gemara says, well, you can figure it out, because it says ish lere'ehu, and that word ish reminds us of another pasuk, says the Gemara, pasuk in Parshas Baloscha, v'ha'ish Moshe anav ma'od mikol adam asher al pnei adamah. So that Moshe, in this interaction, he doesn't somehow, you know, make himself out to be bigger than, and, you know, he doesn't, you know, feel threatened by the fact that Yisro knew him back when he was a shepherd and he was described as ish mitzri hitzilanu miyad haroim. He's not embarrassed about any of that. And so maybe that's exactly why we would have this story before Matan Torah, as if to remind us that even if it happened to be, you know, according to Rabbi Yeshua, that Matan Torah preceded the story of Yisro and Moshe, that it's a reminder that if you want to really be mekabel as haTorah, if you want to receive the Torah, then you have to behave in the way that Moshe behaves in receiving his father-in-law. And maybe the apotheosis of this idea can be found in the final pasuk of this interaction between Moshe and Yisro, after Moshe tells Yisro all the things that happened, and Yisro responds very religiously. He's the first person to say, Baruch Hashem. That's actually Yisro's line, believe it or not, that didn't come from, you know, any very famous rabbi. Yisro is the one who says in the Torah, Baruch Hashem, Asher Yitzil Aschem Yad Mitzrayim Yad Paro. So the Torah says that Yisro offered korbanos. Allah is Vachim Elokim. Vayavo Aaron v'chol ziknei Yisrael lechol lechem im chosein Moshe livnei Elokim. So Aaron comes and all of the ziknei Yisrael come, and they're going to have the korbanos, and they're going to participate in this meal with Yisro. So everybody says, Moshe leheichan halach. Where's Moshe? Aaron is there, the Ziknei Yisrael are there. Where did Moshe go all of a sudden? So, unlike our students, he didn't go to the Cayman Islands, he didn't go to Puerto Rico. So where did he go? Right? You take the attendance sort, so where did he go? So the Gemara explains, Rashi quotes it, he says that Moshe was Omeinu Misharis. Moshe didn't go anywhere. Moshe was serving as the waiter. So he said, somebody needs to serve the food, right? So here's my father-in-law. So, you know, the same way. And it's a very beautiful thing. So maybe that's part of the message of having the story of Yisro before the story of Matan Torah, even if chronologically speaking, according to Rabbi Yeshua, in the Gemara Masech Tazvachim, it happened afterwards. That's approach number one, okay, for what it's worth. Approach number two. We know that Yisro the next day, Vahimi Macharas, and again, that's where Rashi quotes the idea that it was really after Matan Torah that he privileges this view of Rabbi Yeshua. So in any event, the Yisrael, we know, has a certain criticism of the way that Moshe is handling the Jewish people. So what was the criticism again? Yisrael comes in with his McKinsey, he's a management consultant. He comes in, says all kinds of inefficiencies going on here. We have to change everything. So what does he say? He says that, right, you can't have this. So it's not good for you. Navol tibol. You're going to get worn out. What's that? Right. It's very, but my family, right? He hasn't mentioned that, but surely that's also a factor, right? And it's not good. Navolti bolgam atagam azasher imach ki chaved mimcha davar lo suchal asol levadecha. There's no way that you're going to be able to do this by yourself. And then he says Shema bekoli yatzchei as a big piece of advice, and he establishes the judiciary. So one way of looking at this is a matter of efficiency, that you don't want long lines. Nobody likes to wait online. Okay, this was, of course, before a smartphone, so all you could possibly do is talk to the person that's in front of you or in back of you, and who's going to do that, right? You're in a fight with that person. That's why you're coming to see Moshe, and it's obviously very tiresome for Moshe. So maybe it's just practical. But based on a Rashi, which is itself based on a Mechilta, so I wanted to suggest a different approach. So Rashi says that that the idea that Moshe is sitting down is mizalzel bichvodan shel Yisrael, that it in fact denigrates the Jewish people. That ha yoshev kemelech, that here you are sitting as if on some kind of a royal throne, and the Jewish people have to wait, you know, all day long. That this is not just an inefficiency or something which is, you know, from a pragmatic standpoint objectionable, but there's a value which is being compromised here. And that you, like, have arrogated all the Torah knowledge to yourself, and this is not the right message to send in terms of the Jewish people. And I would indeed say that if that were the reason, then I could well understand why we would want to present this story just before Matan Torah. Because as the Rambam famously says in Hilchos Talmud Torah, that unlike when it comes to being a Kohen, where Aharon and Aharon's direct descendants have already acquired the Keser Kun, and unlike the monarchy, which has been seized by David and David's descendants, the Keser Malchus Zachabo Dachbiruvanav Keser Torah. When it comes to Torah, the important thing is Hareza Munach Va'omed Umuchan Komi Sherotze Yavo V'Yitol. That everybody should feel that he or she has access to Torah. Nobody should feel that Torah only belongs to one person. So part of what Yisroel was suggesting here, according to this approach in the Mechilta, is that if everybody is simply going to be dependent on you, that sends the message, hey, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, Moshe is in charge of the Torah, and if we have a question, we can ask him, but we don't really have a direct connection to this. So then you look at Yisro's advice, not as just a way of suggesting that it'll be more efficient, but if the Torah knowledge is disseminated out, and for every 10 people, you have a dayan, so that means every kid that's growing up can aspire to be, maybe you can't aspire to be exactly like Moshe, but he could say, hey, for every 10 people, there's a dayan, for every 50 people, there's a dayan, for every 100 people, so it's a way of actually disseminating and making Torah that much more accessible and that much more reachable for Am Yisrael, and if that's true, then maybe that's exactly the message that we would want to project before Matan Torah itself. The Torah wasn't something that was supposed to be reserved for Moshe. And on the contrary, really, Adrabba, we would say that so much of the Torah is presented by Hashem to Moshe to relay to the Jewish people, right? Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor. Maybe the easiest thing to do, you wouldn't have to have this whole sound and light show on Har Sinai. The Jewish people wouldn't have to prepare for 3 days. What would have been simplest? You have Hashem can speak to Moshe, and Moshe can say, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. He can change around the grammatical tenses if he wants to make it a little bit better, even though we know that shifts between the first two Dibros and the rest of the Esaris of Dibros. So why does Hashem need to speak directly to Jewish people? For this exact reason. To inculcate in the Jewish people the sense that they do have a direct connection to Hashem, that they do have a direct connection to the Torah. This is a whole big debate. How many of the Esaris HaDibros did we hear directly from Hashem? According to Rashi, in this week's parsha, we heard all of them. Vayidaber Elokim es kol hadvarim ha'ela lemor, that we actually heard all of them from Hashem. According to the Gemara Masechta Makos, it sounds like we only heard the first two from Hashem. But whatever you think we heard from Hashem, whether it's the whole thing or just the first two, certainly it reinforced this notion of a direct connection. Hashem ha'am, kol Elohim edaber elav mitoch ha'shamayim, mitoch ha'esh, the point of a direct connection. Maybe that was part of what Yisro came to suggest. So that would be yet another approach that the story of Yisro reminds us about, just how important it is for everybody to have a direct connection, and not for Moshe to have all the knowledge arrogated to himself. Yisro wasn't just making a pragmatic point, but really a principled point of Mizalzel Bechlodan Shal Yisrael Shata Yoshev Kemelech Vehem Omdim Alacha, that it's as if Moshe is the only one who has access to Torah. That would be a second approach. The third and final approach that I just wanted to suggest has to do with the story of Yisro himself. Now, this is a big debate. I have to admit that and be candid about that. What exactly happened with Yisro? Just before, like, the process of Matan Torah, as it's presented in this week's Parsha, beginning with the fourth Aliyah, going through the seventh Aliyah, the Aseres HaDibros, or the sixth Aliyah. But Aliyos 1 through 3 tell the story of Yisro. So the last pasuk about Yisro says, Vayishalach Moshe Eschos No, Vayelech Lo El Artso, that Yisro went back home. So there's a big debate what exactly happened with Yisro. We know somehow Yisro's descendants end up in the land of Israel, and they appear to be allies of the Jewish people. I wouldn't say there's any unanimity, but I would say the consensus view is indeed that Yisro converted. Not everybody takes that view. Some people take the view that he said, you know, the Torah discusses again, Parshas Paloscha, that he was too old or the climate would be too difficult for him, but at least his children, in fact, did join the Jewish people. But for this third approach, allow me to make the assumption, along with the majority view amongst the Meforshim, that Yisro himself did convert, did become a member of the Jewish people. Vayishma Yisrael, that he was so impressed, and that when he said those words, Baruch Hashem Asher Hitzil Eschem, and in particular, Atayadati Ki Gadol Hashem Mikol Elokim, that he know Mikol Elohim, that he knows that God is the one true God and greater than all the other gods, that this was a moment of spiritual transformation. So, if that is indeed the case, that Yisro went through this process of conversion, that Yisro was moved by whatever it was that he heard, I think that becomes a very important paradigm for the way that we should understand Matan Torah. In fact, the Gemara Masechta Krisus itself, on Daf Tes, explains that the basic requirements of Giyur, the basic requirements of conversion, which include ritual immersion in a mikvah, which include bris milah for a male, which include offering a korban in theory, and which include accepting the Torah, are all derived from the experience that the Jewish people went through at Har Sinai. We know the Jewish people ritually immersed themselves, v'kidash tamayom u'machar. We know that there were korbanos offered. That's actually described in this week's parsha, not in last week's parsha. We know that they had a bris milah in conjunction with the korban Pesach. And of course, what Matan Torah was all about was a Kabbalah Satorah. And so, you know, it's easy for us, especially today, to sometimes have a very misguided sentiment that somehow, you know, that there are the naturally born and then there are the second-class citizens, those who joined the faith more recently than us. And this is really a very unhealthy attitude and can lead to a lot of very negative prejudices. We know the Torah wants us to have the opposite attitude of Avas HaGer. And maybe the reason that the Torah would formulate Matan Torah and presented in light of Yisro's story, whereas Yisro, who's a clear convert, is to remind us that indeed all of us are really part of this story of Giyur, that our natural and national conversion took place in the context of Matan Torah. And Yisro's personal story then becomes really a microcosm of our national story. And it's important for us to remind ourselves that we all went through this process of conversion, of Mishchu Yedeichem Avodah Zarah, Kchu Es HaMitzvos, the transformation that we all underwent to the process of leaving Egypt and coming to Har Sinai. And we should never, ever have any truck with those who look down on, who denigrate, who offend, who belittle those who are converts themselves or descendants of more recent converts. And on the contrary, we should always remember that the story of Yisrael leads naturally into the story of Matan Torah. He was a convert, so too was the case with all of us, that we all went through this process of national conversion, even if genealogically speaking we can say that we're descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We still had to go through this process ourselves. So again, just to summarize and distill, there is a legitimate question to be asked, Ma Inyan Yitro Eitzel Matan Torah, what's the exact connection, especially if you believe that Yitro came after Matan Torah. So we explored three different possibilities. One of them was that it's really about Moshe's behavior, that Moshe's behavior really models for us what it means for us to be modest people, and that modesty is a prerequisite for the acquisition of Torah, perspective number one. Perspective number two, that it's really about Yitro's suggestion. Yitro suggests to Moshe that it's inappropriate for him to arrogate all the Torah knowledge for himself, but he should actually be involved in the process of disseminating and decentralizing Torah. That creates a much healthier image. In fact, that's what Matan Torah was all about. It was reinforcing a direct connection between God and the Jewish people. It would have been very simple and efficient for God to speak to Moshe to relate to the Jewish people. That's not what God wanted. And then third, it reminds us all that just as Yisro was a convert, so too we all went through the process of conversion. We shouldn't have any sense that somehow a person who joins at a more recent stage of history is somehow any less than or anything inferior. On the contrary, we should be reminded every time we review the story of Matan Torah that first we've got to pass through the story of Yisro, and reminds us that this is our story as well, that we had to join up, and that the conversion process that our ancestors went through in Matan Torah becomes the archetype and the prototype for Giyur, for conversion, in all successive generations.
Okay. Well.